box. On the van? Yeah. No, on the title.
Good evening and welcome to the City of Aurora Grande City Council meeting for October 9th, 2018. May we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Harmon?
Present.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Here.
Councilmember Brown?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Ray?
Here.
And Mayor Hill?
Here. Please join us in a moment of reflection. Thank you. This evening, to help us with the flag salute, we have our friends from South County Toastmasters, Mr. Joe Skoda, Mr. Mitchell, and Brian Skoda, and Louis Kermessa. If you would all come up, and if you would all come up to the podium, please, and would everyone please stand for the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Please be seated, and if you'd like to tell us about some of the latest activities with Toastmasters.
Absolutely. Good morning, World Grandy. That's one of the things we learned at Toastmasters, how to speak and confidently, regardless of what we're talking about. But the point is, we have an organization that teaches self-development and confidence skills. A lot of us lack of. Even if we see people on TV giving interviews all the time, and sometimes we don't know what they're talking about. They get off tangent. They may get a lot of ums or ers or just going out in left field. That happens sometimes. So we teach people self-confidence and leadership skills through the art of public speaking, which all of you do on a regular basis, but most of us don't. So the organization we have gives a safe environment for everyone to come in and fall on your faces, make mistakes, and more importantly, practice, so you can become better communicators in the future. And the big deal is we have a lot of fun doing so. We have an open house coming up in a couple weeks, South County Presenters. We meet at Life Point Church over behind the American Legion down that way, Pilgrim Way, at 7 o'clock every Tuesday morning.
7 a.m.
7 a.m. And there's other clubs in the area, and please look us up, toastmasters.org. And I'm currently the club growth director for a member of 4,000 members, all the way from Las Vegas to Modesto and L.A., and I love it. And I started my first club here a few years ago, and I'm still involved, and we're making a difference in this world. And please come see what we're all about. Come join us. Thank you.
Thank you, and that's 7 a.m. every Tuesday.
7 a.m. every Tuesday. I'll pick you up, Mayor.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Agenda review. This evening we have no closed session announcements. Move that all ordinances presented for introduction or adoption be read in title only and all further readings be waived.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That passes unanimously. So would anyone like to change the order of appearance on the agenda of anything? Okay.
No, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
This evening, we do have two special presentations. First is introduction of a new employee, and that would be Andrew Perez, assistant planner. And I'll invite up Community Development Director McClish.
Good evening. I am very pleased this evening to have Andrew Perez to introduce to you and to the community this evening. Andrew grew up in Chino Hills, California, and moved to the Central Coast to attend Cal Poly. He graduated from Cal Poly with a bachelor's degree in city and regional planning and was hired soon after by the city of Santa Barbara in their planning division. He worked for 4 years in the planning division before spending his past year in their transportation planning section. During his time with Santa Barbara, Andrew gained experience in code enforcement, transportation, and downtown planning. and development review before securing his current position here with us as an assistant planner. Andrew is already demonstrating value to the community and his fellow employees. We're just overjoyed to have him here. Andrew is happily married to his wife, Sarah, and they reside here in Arroyo Grande. In his spare time, he enjoys golfing, woodworking, and hiking. So, Andrew Perez.
Welcome.
Welcome, Andrew.
I won't make him say a few words.
Next, we have introduction and oath of office for Juan Carranza, and I'll invite up Chief Pryor and our city clerk, Kelly Whitmore.
Good evening. It's my pleasure to introduce you to the newest member of our law enforcement family, Officer Juan Carranza. Juan began his career at age 17 when he entered into a summer high school program that let him intern with the Cuesta College Police Department. And I'd like also recognize a member from the Cuesta College Police Department that's here to support Juan. So that says a lot about Juan. As the program was ending, they recognized Juan's work ethic and asked him to continue working. And Juan happily said yes and began working as a public safety officer for the Cuesta College. And as a public safety officer, Juan assisted the campus police officers, issued parking citations, and patrolled the campus. Juan made a good friend with a coworker while working at Cuesta College, and that friend told Juan about his plan of joining the military. Juan became fascinated and decided he would join with his friend, and Juan served in the United States Navy from 2010 to 2014. Thank you for your service. During his last year in the military, Juan and his wife Danielle had a baby boy named Gianni. Gianni. I knew I was going to mess it up. And then several weeks ago, Juan and his wife had their second newborn son named Danielle. So congratulations. After Juan exited the military, he began the police academy at Allen Hancock College. And during his attendance at the police academy, Juan became co-sponsored by the Cuesta College Police Department. And he graduated class number 108. Juan began his law enforcement career on May 5th, 2016, and served as a sworn police officer for the Cuesta College until now. And then Juan also rejoined the United States Navy Reserves while continuing his career in law enforcement. Interesting story. One day, Juan attended the Peace Officer Memorial Service, and he saw an old coworker and friend, Senior Officer Stephen Doherty, who works for the Arroyo Grande Police Department. Stephen joked with Juan and asked him if he'd consider leaving Cuesta College to come work for Arroyo Grande Police Department. Little did Senior Officer Doherty know that the Arroyo Grande Police Department was actually Juan's first choice in a police department. However, we weren't hiring at that time when Juan graduated the academy. So the rest is history, and now Juan's eager to serve our community. So welcome aboard, Juan. So at this time, I'd like to invite our city clerk to come on up, and also Juan's wife, Danielle, if you could join us for the oath of office.
Thank you. That brings us to item number 7, which is community comments and suggestions. Any member of the public is welcome to address the council on any item that is not on the agenda this evening. For those items that are on the agenda this evening, we'll have an opportunity to comment on each of those items before the council takes up each item. So if you'd like to address the council at this time on any item that's not on the agenda, please feel free.
Good evening, Council, Mayor Hill, staff. My name is Linda Osti. I live in the village of Arroyo Grande on Cherry. I'd like to offer an invocation. Eternal God, we give you thanks for giving us another day. We thank you once again that we can come before you and ask guidance for the men and women of this council, this state, and this country. Bless the people of this great city, state, and nation with wisdom, knowledge, and understanding during this campaign season, that they might responsibly participate in our American democracy. Please keep all who work for the people in good health, that they might faithfully fulfill the great responsibility given them in their service. We ask that you protect our elected officials, our first responders, our sons and daughters serving in harm's way. Bless us this day and every day. May all that is done here this day be for your greater honor and glory. Amen. Thank you.
Thank you. Would anyone else like to address the council at this time?
Patty Welsh, Arroyo Grande. I would like to know what it takes to get the police department to patrol WASNA and enforce the traffic laws. I've asked this of the chief prior and the last three chiefs of police. I've brought this up to Jim Bergman, as well as the past city managers and interim city manager. I brought this issue up to the traffic commission about WASNA Rose, and recently I brought up another issue about WASNA to Jim Bergman, and I've never heard back as to whether anything is being done with that, and it had to do with the line of sight problem. I've stood before this council numerous times this year addressing these issues, and yet nothing has been done. Who do I need to speak to in order to get some answers? Because this is what I keep hearing. We don't have a designated patrol officer, and when we get one, we need to train them. That'll take about 6 months. We are down officers, and we need to hire more. In fact, with time, we only see officers on the east side as to open and close Strother Park or to use the facilities. Now I am told they can't enforce the speed limit because they need a new speed study. Where else in the city does a neighborhood have to put up with a speed limit of 45 miles per hour, semi-trucks, full RVs pulling cars or boats behind them, trucks towing boats, drunk drivers leaving the lake, speeding packs of motorcycles along with everyday traffic? Nowhere else. As years go by, the traffic has increased dramatically because of congestion on 101, and people are now using back roads. So let me ask, while we wait for a speed study, can't the police enforce parking at Crown Hill on WASNA at 2 p.m. when parents think it's okay to park where it says no parking anytime and it interferes with the flow of traffic? Or how about the crosswalk at Strother? Cars don't stop or even slow down for people in the crosswalk. Or the DUIs during the summer months. Or the latest one is the cars passing you on the right-hand side if I pull out from La Cuesta to turn left onto WASNA. And none of these need a speed study. This year we have had a bicyclist killed on WASNA, and we had a resident in a wheelchair hit and killed in a crosswalk here in the village. I've had an officer tell me he won't write a speeding ticket unless the person's going to jail. I don't know if that's okay with the chief of police. It's not okay with me. I've watched cars pull out on Bridge Street, turn left onto Branch with an officer right behind them. Officer never pulls them over. What has happened with the officers we have hired the last few years? Were we not able to retain them? I know hiring is a problem across the state, so let me ask, if we can't get up to the past levels of officers we have, are we just going to continue to not enforce the traffic laws? I've made suggestions to the chief and yet have never seen a single one implemented, and it's not going to cost them anymore.
Thank you.
I see the department has had time. I had no And no, I don't think I should have to petition, as one city council member suggested, in order to get the city to do something. This is what you were elected to do. Something needs to be done on Wasna. I do see the machine up there now saying that how fast people are going. It's only because I started hollering again this morning. 17 years I've been asking these questions.
Thank you. Do we have any comment about the enforcement there? I know we did have speed studies that were expired, and that has been an issue.
Good evening, Mayor, Council Members, Jim Bergman, City Manager. We are tentatively scheduled to have speed studies to your council in the first meeting in November. We are currently trying to get a traffic engineering consultant to take the all the data that was collected by the police volunteers and do a efficient and acceptable analysis of those numbers. So, again, the first meeting in November is where we have that scheduled for. We certainly listened to residents. We got an email from Ms. Welsh this morning requesting a speed trailer, and we had the speed trailer out the same day. I know the police department is out there actively writing tickets as well as doing other patrol work and responding to calls. So,
and I've personally observed that myself as well. So,
can I ask a quick question, please? Is there any way to get some data collected from the police department to be able to give to Ms. Welsh to help her kind of see, for example, number of tickets written, or I don't know what's public information that we could kind of reassure that things are happening out there and not being ignored? Mm-hmm. What data could we give is what I'm asking.
Right. I don't know it off the top of my head. The police department does put out a monthly, there's the chief.
He's back.
He's coming out. So I'm going to let the chief give you the correct answer.
Thank you.
Good evening, Bill Pryor, Chief of Police. We can get data. We can get data from the radar trailer that's out there now. We can do traffic accident collision data and citation data as well.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Are we looking for a specific time period, certain area? Wasn't pretty big.
How about let's go with 6 months?
6 months.
A year. I don't know.
Okay.
Okay. We'll work on it, and we'll make it available to Ms. Welsh, and we'll probably also make it data prominent for everyone else to see, too.
Can you CC the council on that as well?
Yes.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Okay, continuing, please.
Okay. All right. Hello, I am Joshua Aguilar, and I am here to address my concern about smoking activity in the areas of Arroyo Grande. So while it has established laws for tobacco-free zones in certain public areas, I would propose that all areas of Arroyo Grande should be tobacco-free. And if it's not included yet, these public areas should include dining establishments, entryways, public events, recreation areas, service areas, sidewalks, and work sites. And tobacco activity, including cigarettes, cigars, e-cigarettes, and vaping in Arroyo Grande should be limited to people smoking only on their private property. Because smoking in public areas has been a public nuisance to most people, which one of the main reasons being secondhand smoke. The American Lung Association, as well as other sources, state that secondhand smoke is extremely dangerous and put people at risk for diseases and cancer. And other sources, such as the ASCO Foundation, state that secondhand smoke is especially dangerous around young children because their bodies and lungs are still in development at that time. So another huge problem that smoking activity has generated is that smoking has constantly been littered all over the sidewalks and streets, and it's also been reported it's been reported by the BMJ publishing group that cigarette butts are the number one most common littered object in the world, and about 4.5 trillion cigarette butts are littered worldwide each year. So the American Lung Association's document, the State of Tobacco Control, has issued grades for smoke-free outdoor air in several locations in San Luis Obispo for county for 2018. Oroville County has received a D, Morro Bay received an A, Paso Robles received a B, and San Luis Obispo also received an A. The reason that Arroyo Grande has a much lower grade for their smoke-free outdoor air is because Morro Bay, Paso Robles, and San Luis Obispo have laws for more tobacco-free areas and outdoor places than Arroyo Grande does. And it says here in related legislations that these countries have passed similar ordinances about their tobacco-free smoking activity policies. So Paso Robles prohibited smoking activity in public places, and Morro Bay and San Luis Obispo has passed similar ordinances like that. So those falling places would be operated buildings, city enclosed spaces, outdoor public events, any city park or playground, and etc. And that concludes my idea, and I thank you for your time hearing this.
Thank you, Mr. Aguilar.
Joshua, does that have your email on it?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Good evening, Planning Commissioner Terry Fowler Payne, running for City Council. I was given the opportunity and received the information through the city for Heal and Housing Building, the connection that was a seminar that was put on last week by the City of San Luis Obispo. I was very impressed with it. It went into details on how to create more affordable housing, not only in clusters, but spreading it out through the community. I was very disappointed the fact that out of all the people that were there, probably 150, there was no other representative there from the city of Arroyo Grande, and yet I received this document through the email about the seminar. So there were several people there from SLOCOG, from the City of San Luis, Home Builders Association, Self-Help Housing, Haslow, Habitat for Humanity, and Home Share for San Luis Obispo. And I thought any one of those items would have been a great initiative for us to look into for affordable housing here in Arroyo Grande to help people get a hand up instead of a handout. So thank you.
Thank you.
Council with Linda Drummy. I've stood before this council before requesting signage for Berry Gardens. We're the only real neighborhood, and we're quite a big size, that has no signage anywhere saying welcome to Berry Gardens or just any type of signage like that. And it was in the initial specific plans, and it still is on there, but it never was completed. So I tell people where I live, and they go, where's that? So I say, oh, behind CVS or the low income. They know where that is. They don't know where Berry Gardens is. And I think that it would be nice to have at the entrance by Elm Street in Cortland and Grand in Cortland and maybe off of Oak Park, something that designates that this is Berry Gardens. I would appreciate your consideration again, because this has just gone nowhere in the past. And I think it was in their specific plans. It needs to be done. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hello, Colleen Kubel, candidate for City Council. I would just like to ask that the council and every person in this room and every person that's watching from home be cognizant of the fact that we have people destroying and stealing campaign signs in the city of Arroyo Grande. And I would encourage every person who sees that happening, police department is aware of it, they are on patrol watching it, and every person needs to report something like that if it happens. Those signs cost money. Every one of us who is a candidate or whatever, it costs us a lot of money. And if it's someone that's doing it that you don't know about or whatever, they need to. We need to be telling the police department if it is seen. It's ridiculous. And our country is better than that. Our city is better than that. Our citizens are better than that. So let's all get together and make this a fair campaign so that everybody has the same rights. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else? Anyone else like to address the council at this time? Okay. Seeing none, we'll close the public comment and move on to city manager and director's reports. Mr. Bergman.
I have no reports this evening.
Nothing from vacation, even.
Or harvest?
Just this beard.
Okay, moving on then to the consent agenda. Would anyone like to consider anything on the consent agenda separately?
Yes. 9G and 9H.
9H. I have a question on 9F, but no, no objection to it. Any others?
No, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Is there any public comment on the consent agenda items? These are all the items numbers 9. That would be 9A through 9H. Okay, hearing none at this time. We'll take items 9G and H separately. My question on item 9F is, have we completed all of the work on the Women's Club building that was intended, and is that all to our satisfaction at this point?
That is correct. It's all complete, and we're recommending that you accept the kitchen remodel project.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, having heard no public comment, do we have a motion to accept items 9A through F?
Move for approval.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve items 9A through 9F on the consent agenda. May we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Councilmember Harmon?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Ray?
Yes.
And Mayor Hill?
Yes. Those passed unanimously. And Mayor Pro Tem for item 9G.
Jim, I have the same question for both of them. I have no problem with either of these, but the only problem I have is that neither of them were budgeted. And I'm not quite understanding why we're using our reserves to pay for those. I'm not suggesting that we shouldn't. I'm suggesting that when we did our two-year budget, I don't think anybody's proposing getting rid of either of these two events anytime soon. I just am bringing to the attention of you and maybe Debbie, if she's listening, that on our mid-year budget review, we can have that permanently put inside our budget so that we can plan for that.
Thank you for pointing that out, and we will do that.
All right. With that, I'll move approval for 9G and 9H.
Second.
Okay, yeah, it's been moved and seconded. I heard, I think, Councilmember Barnidge first.
Or loudest.
That we approve items 9G and 9H. May we have a roll call, please?
Mayor Pro Tem Ray?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Harmon?
Yes.
And Mayor Hill?
Yes. Moving then to item 10, that is public hearings, and I will ask the city clerk to please introduce item 10A.
Item 10A is consideration of an ordinance making administrative updates to various sections of Title II, Administration and Personnel, Title 10, Vehicles and Traffic, Title 12, Street Sidewalks and Public Places, and Title 16, Development Code of the Rio Grande Municipal Code, which is Development Code Amendment Number 18-004.
And Director McLeish.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Before you this evening is an ordinance that amends several sections, as you heard, of the Rio Grande Municipal Code, and that is commonly referred to as a cleanup ordinance. Back in August, this council had adopted ordinance number 695, and without modification, and that effectively disbanded the Traffic Commission, Parks and Recreation Commission, and the Historic Resources Committee and reassigned duties. This was due, again, in order to streamline city processes and in response to budget concerns. During the consideration of the ordinance, it was recognized at that time that there were several areas of the municipal code that included references to these committees and commissions, and that there would need to be a follow-up cleanup ordinance. These modifications are considered minor in nature and not substantial changes in any procedure or policy. So again, this ordinance provides amendments to the sections that were referred to by the city clerk and was reviewed by this Planning Commission because it does include some modifications to Title 16 or our development code. And whenever there's a change to that title, the Planning Commission makes a recommendation to you, and which they did. And it is recommended by the Planning Commission that the City Council introduce an ordinance making administrative updates to various sections of Titles 2, 10, 12, and 16 of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code to reassign duties previously assigned by the code to the Traffic Commission, Historical Resources Committee, and Parks and Recreation Commission. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Any questions?
No, thank you.
I have one.
Mayor,
go ahead.
I don't have a question.
Just a quick one, Teresa, on page 3, section 1. I'm missing something with 2.18050 officers. I'm not seeing what that has to do with the committees and commissions. Is that cleaning something else up at the same time?
Yes, it was just a catch. If you will. So we did include it. It referred to an old title of a staff title of planning director.
I see. It's a dumb question, but we don't have to, like, notice that specially or anything like that because it's not on the topic?
Well, the title, it was included in the public hearing notice.
Got it. Okay, great. That's it.
Okay. Is there any public comment on this item? Any public comment on item 10A? Okay, hearing none, I'll ask the city attorney to please read the title of the proposed ordinance.
This is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Arroyo Grande making administrative updates to various sections of Title II, Administration and Personnel, Title 10, Vehicles and Traffic, Title 12, Streets, Sidewalks, and Public Places, and Title 16, Development Code of the Arroyo Grande Municipal Code.
Thank you very much. Do we have any additional comment?
I do.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Just being consistent with my vote before that I didn't want to eliminate these commissions and wanted them to go ad hoc or twice, or I guess that would be semi-annually, not biannually, I'll be not supporting this tonight.
Any other comments?
No.
Okay. Do we have a motion to proceed?
Move for approval.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded that we approve the ordinance as presented. May we have a roll call, please?
Councilmember Brown?
Yes.
Councilmember Barnidge?
Yes.
Councilmember Harmon?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Ray?
No.
And Mayor Hill?
Yes. Item passes 4-1. Old business, we have none. Item 12 is new business, and I'll ask the city clerk to please introduce item 12A.
Item 12A is receive information regarding city neighborhood traffic calming guidelines.
And Director McClish.
Thank you again, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. At the September 11th City Council meeting, under Council Communications, Mayor Hill expressed concerns about traffic issues in the Berry Gardens neighborhood and requested staff place an item regarding these measures on an upcoming agenda. And Councilmember Brown concurred, and here we are this evening with this update and information for you. The city has adopted, back in April of 2016, a document including procedural and educational information and measures to guide consideration of traffic calming measures in the city. And these traffic calming measures have quite a wide gamut in terms of what they may or may not include. They're generally broken up between passive measures and more active or built constructed measures, and including areas in the right-of-way in order to calm traffic. These items, these measures require technical analysis and warrant, what we call warrant analysis, that are prescribed in state guidance documents. And they also require a high degree of neighborhood involvement and ultimately support for a specific alternative. This is just a slide right from the traffic calming guidelines. And these are in your packet as well and online. And they're just they're examples of types of traffic calming measures. These are the active measures, the built measures that can be performed or constructed in a neighborhood in order to address traffic calming concerns. And I should say again that these traffic calming concerns are, if they are to be constructed, they have to go through a technical process and a warrant analysis in order to be considered safe and proper to construct in a neighborhood. The traffic calming guidelines also include some information about general costs and the sort of balance of considerations, the pros and cons. I should say this is just an example of what we refer to as a speed table instead of a speed hump. It's a little more of a table. And the bottom picture here is called a raised intersection. They're just simply both measures to have a driver pause and slow down as there's something different and unusual on the road. Roadway, of course, proper signage is always included in any kind of constructed item like this. And before I go on, I would like to just acknowledge that this informational item before you is simply the fact that we have these guidelines, kind of what they include, the status as they pertain to a particular neighborhood. I do not have a traffic consultant here to go through and explain the exact pros and cons, although we're pretty familiar of different measures, or to choose any measures this evening, simply to inform, and the recommendation, as you will see shortly, is to receive this information. The Berry Gardens neighborhood is here before you, and this is one neighborhood where we have looked at to some specific degree in terms of whether or not certain traffic calming measures may or may not be ripe or warranted to proceed with here in the future. There was a study done in starting in 2014, 2015, that looked at specifically a warrant analysis for a stop sign location in the Berry Garden neighborhoods to address concerns at that time of cut-through traffic. And the report is included also in your packet this evening for informational purposes. It did include that technical analysis and the warrants and described those. And it also included just sort of the menu of the types of both passive and active types of traffic calming measures that one might look at in the future if it is indeed determined to be warranted. This information was included, very similar types of a menu of item that we eventually included in our citywide traffic calming guidelines. Some differences in terminology, but it's all there, kind of the steps you would take over time in a neighborhood as it involves and as concerns are perceived or realized in that neighborhood, and in terms of traffic safe and safety concerns. We have been gathering data, making observations, and sort of this first step or first rung in the traffic calming ladder. This is just an example from the study of a radar trailer. We have indeed placed that in the neighborhood and periodically over time. And this is just sort of one of the, first steps, gather this data, place signs, sort of the educational and data gathering stage. Additionally, in that I would include in this first rung is the education programs, the safety. These occurred as folks are cited, certainly there, as we have meetings like this where we do provide some information. We put these documents online that provide other information. And, of course, police enforcement, currently directed enforcement, is being performed in this neighborhood at this time. And although the documents included in your packet are rather detailed, I do think they're both readable documents. Currently, as you heard earlier this evening, the city is updating our speed surveys, and we'll bring that to you shortly for recertification. These are specific to the city's busier streets, or what we refer to as collector streets and arterial streets. And while we're doing that and conducting enforcement in various areas, including the Berry Gardens neighborhood, we continue to gather that information. One more note to make is that the traffic calming guidelines are pretty specific in terms of what would actually be necessary to get something constructed, an active measure constructed. And that, of course, everybody recognizes, includes the most challenging items are agreement in the neighborhood, where we would need to see that in some kind of demonstrated form. The traffic guidelines include a petition with a high percentage of neighborhood agreement on a specific measure, of course. And then there's cost. And the guidelines simply say this cost may be borne by the city or by the neighborhood itself. These are two big important items for anybody to consider if they're just wanting something to quickly address a concern. You may certainly be able to step back and say if there's a speed hump right next to your home, it may have a noise connotation to this while providing a potential benefit in terms of traffic calming to the neighborhood as a whole. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions. I have Robin Dickerson, our city engineer, here this evening, of course, and Chief Pryor. We just wanted to address your request for sort of what we have in place for the city in terms of procedure and policy and what we're doing in the specific neighborhood. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. I asked for this item after hearing numbers of concerns from residents related to speeding, cut-through traffic, especially cut-through traffic in this neighborhood, speeding generally. But I wanted to bring this forward not only for Berry Gardens, but other neighborhoods that are having perceived issues with especially speeding traffic for presenting in residents' awareness of what the various mechanisms are that we have to potentially address traffic issues of these natures. the staff report that's attached tonight does have numbers of various things that could be selected depending on the issues and the severity of the issues. So I wanted to, first of all, thank you for bringing that forward and reminding everyone that these are methods that are available. So a question would be, and I believe I saw it in the staff report, but typically how many residents in an area would be expected to present, say, a petition in order to implement one of these possible changes?
Traffic calming guidelines as adopted includes a threshold of about two-thirds or 66% of a neighborhood would need to buy in on a specific alternative that, again, has been demonstrated to be warranted through technical analysis. Mm-hmm. So in the Berry Gardens case, it would be about 119 homes.
Okay, and that would be, would this be on one particular street or throughout the entire neighborhood?
Well, in the Berry Gardens case, it's a well-defined neighborhood. It was approved through a specific plan process. The other neighborhoods, for example, we reviewed the LaPointe McKinley Street neighborhood a couple years ago. Actually, that's what precipitated the authoring and the approval of the traffic calming guidelines. They're a little bit harder in some instances to define. However, through analysis of the concern, you can reach a boundary pretty reasonably and quickly through that analysis. So in some cases, the neighborhood will have to be defined in the study by staff or consultant as we're considering what traffic calming measures perceived issues or real issues out there and the potential remedies. Always keeping in mind that especially in the case of built traffic calming measures, especially in the case of the more extreme traffic calming measures like partial closures, for example, may then distribute traffic onto other streets, other nearby streets, or even sometimes, may affect traffic patterns in the neighborhood. So those are also considerations in that definition.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions?
I do.
Councilmember Harmon.
Thank you. Can you remind me again what type of street designation Cortland has? Is it a collector? And can you also give the definition of how that street is described?
Certainly a collector. It is indeed defined as a collector. It's defined in our circulation element of a general plan. And a collector is essentially a street that connects areas of the neighborhood and connects residential streets to another collector or an arterial street.
Okay. And then is the speed survey indeed planned for Berry Gardens as one of the updates that we've been talking about?
On Cortland, yes, just on the collector
Cortland
and arterial streets.
So. And so for Cortland and the arterial streets, then is that also to measure any traffic pattern changes resultant of Trillium being built related to the additional residences there? Is that what's prompting that, or is it just that we need to update the speed survey?
We need to update the speed survey, certainly. It is recognized in bringing this forward to you this evening that the last time a specific analysis was made for this neighborhood, it was after the People's Self-Help Housing Project was constructed. Okay. Not sure about the total occupancy of that, but okay, before the Trillium Project was.
Okay.
So the volumes and speeds will be captured in the speed survey for Cortland Street as that comes before you now.
Okay, very good. And then this might be for Chief Pryor. Is there anything you can tell me about any impact that the directed enforcement, traffic enforcement, has had related to the perhaps citations that were given. I know that citations since January, there's been about 40 citations that were given, and I was just wondering if on patrol, if the officers have seen any diminished, maybe more cautious driving, less speeding, because of that enforcement effort. In general, not, you know, percentages, but what's your gut on what you've heard from the officers?
Sure. So the majority, we did run stats for the past 6 months, and the majority of those citations were issued in the month of September, after the September meeting.
Okay.
So I gave a directive to my patrol staff after that meeting to do directed traffic enforcement down in Berry Gardens.
Okay.
The directed traffic enforcement was specific to two different stop sign intersections. It was at the intersection of South Cortland and Huckleberry.
Okay.
And the intersection of South Cortland and Loganberry.
Okay.
So the 40 citations that are mentioned in the report were a combination that occurred at those two locations. They were also instructed to issue any citations for truck route violations, because that also came up and was mentioned in the September meeting. And they did not see any violations of truck route violations. And they also gave me feedback noting that the majority of those 40 citations were the residents of Berry Gardens.
That was my understanding, that at least half of them were actually residents that resided in Berry Gardens. And the reason I'm concerned about that is that we've been hearing concerns about not only traffic, but I'll narrow it down to speeding throughout a number of neighborhoods in our city. And the perception that I was getting specifically from Berry Gardens was that it's all this pass-through traffic going through, connecting to the schools or connecting to Ash, avoiding the Oak Park intersection, things like that. So I think it's significant that over half, and especially since these were majority in September, that were actually residents. So I appreciate that specifics on this, because I think that's an important weight for what we're discussing tonight.
Sure.
And
there was also one other stat I can provide if you'd like.
Yes,
it was
please do.
Involving the two intersections of Cedar and South Cortland, because that
okay.
was mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
In the past 5 years, we had one non-injury traffic collision at that intersection.
And that was in 5 years?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
And at the intersection of Cedar and Boysenberry, we've had no traffic collisions in the past 5 years.
And I have one last question for you, Chief, with your expertise. Do you think, I live on, I think it's a freeway, but it's probably a collector street. And I know that based on where, and this is just my theory, that based on where certain dips are, certain stop signs, it sure appears that people are going, that they're speeding. And I'm wondering if there's been any anecdotal information that what we're hearing is actually cars accelerating because they've just stopped at a stop sign and they're accelerating, and that might sound like there's actually excessive speed going on, and in reality they're just accelerating to from the traffic stop. And I don't know in your training if there's any kind of can you back up my theory, because I'm ready to go public on this and I need a hobby.
Yeah, and a lot of it probably depends on the type of exhaust that the vehicles are using. Mm-hmm. Some are louder than others, mm-hmm. things like that. So I don't have any data to back okay. you up on that. But I have heard a lot of complaints from community members about the perception that there's speeding going on all over and stop sign violations going all over.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are going to work really hard once we get the speed surveys to go target the different mm-hmm. areas. With the limited patrol staff I have right now that is actually certified and trained, mm-hmm. That can go out and do that, with the goal of getting a dedicated motorcycle traffic officer when we're full staffed again, and We're also, well, as you saw this evening, we have a lot of new staff, mm-hmm. a lot of new officers that mm-hmm. haven't had the training to even be certified yet. So we also have that mapped out and planned over the next mm-hmm. year to get all of our new officers the training and certification. So we will have the ability to have more officers out at multiple locations mm-hmm. to do traffic enforcement.
And so right now, how many officers are certified, trained?
I would be guessing right now. I can check in with our training manager, but mm-hmm. if I had to guess, I have probably maybe 5 or 6.
Okay. I mean, again, it puts weight to the how large our city is, and another element of actually having the certification process. So any citations, you know, you're certified, you're trained, hold up in court, all of that due process that goes with it. I think that's an important element that there's 5 or 6. Next question, is it a lengthy certification process for the officers once they get in to get cleared to go into the classes where you can back them?
I wouldn't consider it too lengthy. It's 24 hours, so it's 3 8-hour days. The issue we find is it's only offered a couple times a year,
right.
and it's so specialized that we will be sending them out of the area to get that certification,
right.
so I have to manage the,
sure.
the schedule with that as well.
Absolutely. And then the last question I have, I think I said that 3 questions ago, but the safety education program, is that a prerequisite before citations are given, or is that something that is done by the officers when they pull someone over and they have a discussion explaining why they were pulled over? Is that incorporated as a safety education program, or are these more structured programs?
So we don't have structured programs at this
okay.
time, but when we have a dedicated motorcycle traffic officer, that individual, that's part of their job duties, that they get training to go out and do that. So
okay.
Our education is through utilization of the radar trailer, mm-hmm. the electronic signboard with certain
okay.
messaging, and then obviously educating through citations and warnings as well.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much for your expertise.
You.
Those are all my questions, Mr. Mayor.
Any others? No, she got all my questions answered.
You're welcome.
Any others? Councilmember Barnage.
Thank you. So on the Omni Means study, so just I want to make sure I kind of remember this, how this all came to be a couple years ago. So we had similar complaints. And we ordered the Berry Gardens traffic calming study. We hired Omni Means to go out and look and make sure to sort of had to do a peer review of, is this neighborhood designed in a way that is still working as far as the engineering and the traffic. That was $12,000 in 2015. People Self-Help Housing was there at that time, correct?
That's correct. It was there. It was just there, so I'm not sure
there.
If it was fully occupied, probably when the data was collected.
Okay, and then we implemented some of the easier suggestions that weren't as much their infrastructure. There was one question I had in the report. It talked about a stop sign, and there was a stop sign that was a speed limit sign placed on for north traffic, North Cortland, but then there was one recommended for South Cortland but not placed. Did I read that correctly? Because that doesn't make sense. It seems like that would be easy to do.
The section in the staff report was saying we did place additional speed signs out there at that time. And just for that stretch, I just noted that it was included the northbound and not the southbound. So for that particular straight stretch. It wasn't a specific location recommended by that report at all. It was just place additional, you know, educational speed warning signs in the neighborhood, but the study did identify that straight stretch of road as sort of the place where speeding may occur because the rest of the neighborhood includes other measures. I mean, this particular neighborhood actually did include, as you see, specifically designed curvature on the collector road just to address the potential speeding problem. So, but no, that wasn't a specific location from the study about the placement of that speed sign.
Okay, but if we have one going one way and there might be, I would assume the same way, I mean the opposite way we'd have speed, it's not like there's an earlier stop sign when you're, do you know what I mean? It seems like if we have one on one side, we could place one if we think there's an issue with that straight stretch.
We can take a look at it. There are additional signs, so just further down. Mm-hmm. It was just a noted observation.
Okay. And then on page 67 of the 2015 Omni Means report, let me get to that. They note some infrastructure changes that can be done, that are sometimes done. But are those typically, when I read those, I didn't think those were typically done on collector streets, because a collector street collects from other streets and collects it and puts it to another part of the city, which is what we want streets to do. We sort of don't want cul-de-sacs all over town or we get into trouble. So some of the, in the conclusion recommendations, when they talk about some of the raised crosswalks, medians, bulbouts I've seen, definitely, but speed humps on collector streets?
I would certainly say that it's the constructed or active traffic calming measures tend to work best on residential streets and not the residential collector streets for the reason you just mentioned. They are indeed designed through the city to specifically convey volumes of traffic and connecting from point A to point B. However, that said, in some collector streets, more of the minor collector instead of the major collector, some cities do place active traffic calming measures in specific locations. But it does take an additional amount of consideration and technical analysis to be able to justify that.
Right. Of course. I just had a question about, because I didn't really remember those on a collector street typically. Okay. And then I want to address this cut through traffic, because I don't know if that's a technical term. I know what people are saying when they mean cut through traffic, but as Councilmember Harmon says, she has cut through traffic on her street because the way people drive, they want to avoid certain areas of the city, so they take the less busy route. So a collector street is definitely a street designed for cut through traffic, in my opinion. Am I wrong in thinking that?
I would say the collector street is designed to, I'm going to say this in a non-technical way, is simply to convey a higher volume of traffic,
right,
connecting to those larger collectors or arterial streets into the neighborhood. So, yes, that's where you should go, if that's what you mean. Now, the smaller residential streets, sometimes those are used as shortcuts, and that's mm-hmm. simply a comfort level or a convenience level at certain times of the day, if certain particulars of certain neighborhoods, they're often used as a shortcut or a cut through.
Okay. And then about the speed surveys, Chief Pryor, when we finally get those, when we do get those back in November, as I recall, our speed limits in our city could go up, because if there's a certain percentage of people that are traveling above a speed on that street, we have to, by law, we have to raise the limit because we can't enforce the speed limit. Is that correct?
That is correct. There is a potential for that. And I don't know, maybe the city engineer could explain more the 85th percentile and how that works. I don't know.
Robin Dickerson, city engineer. The speed studies look at it, what they call the 85th percentile, which is less than 15% of the traffic and what speed or what is the average speed basically on the road. We do have some guidelines where we can reduce that speed if we feel it's not really conducive for the area, but we have limits. So just because we don't like that speed, we can't just reduce it down to whatever we think it should be. So when we start going through these speed studies that the data that's been collected, we may find ourselves raising some speed limits, and there's people that are not going to be happy. So it's one of those things. There's no easy answer. And with everything else we do, you're going to get some people that are going to be happy and you're going to get some people that are not.
Okay.
But we do have guidelines that we have to follow.
Okay, thank you for that, Robin. And then, Chief, my last question. So when the speed surveys come back to us, we've done those a couple years ago, but do we get recommendations? They don't just say, here's what the average is or here's what's going on. Do those come with recommendations from the city or from the police department where you sort of compile the data and give us, this is what we think should happen on this street and this is the speed limit it should or shouldn't be?
I'll try to just very briefly address that. The data is analyzed through a specific set of criteria. The speeds are set according to that criteria. For example, the 85th percentile. Any specific exceptions are explained, and recommendations are explained in what criteria were used to make those recommendations. Those all come before you. The data is all there for the City Council to certify that speed survey.
Okay. And that's November, I heard November 13th, or is that not a hard...
That's the targeted date. Certainly, it's moved around a little bit. May still move a little bit up or back, just depending on how fast the engineer can perform that.
Okay. Thank you for that. Those are my only questions.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. You asked a lot of my questions about the speed survey, so I'll just ask a couple of extra piggybacks. Is the WASNA area going to be on that speed study? Not WASNA area. I don't mean WASNA town site. I mean WASNA road.
Yes, it is.
Okay, great. Just addressing that earlier concern. And I want to go back to the certification thing just to make sure that I'm understanding what that means for our enforcement. When we have X amount of officers that are certified, we have one officer that is and one officer that is not. What's the difference between what they can do in terms of traffic enforcement?
Sure. So the if we're just talking about speed first, the officer that is trained and certified in the use of radar and or LIDAR, they can then go out and enforce speed. But other officers can be trained to do other traffic enforcement other than that until they get their certification. So we can have officers out doing stop sign violations or illegal lane changes and all that kind of stuff. Those don't require the 24 hours of certification that I mentioned earlier. But to do the speed, they need to have the 24-hour.
So you're talking about targeted enforcement. Is that's what that would cover? So, for example, if someone is speeding down Grand and a policeman is following them, they can pull that person over without certification. They're not using radar to do that. They're just traveling at the same rate of speed. Or
so it sounds like you're maybe describing maybe like a bumper pace type thing or something, or you're just, or their observations.
Of course, no.
Or their observations.
Yeah, just through their own observation rather than using technical equipment to do that.
Right, so our staff is encouraged, if they're going to do speed enforcement, they're encouraged to have the certification to do the speed enforcement. But obviously if they see a reckless driver, you know, doing... you know, what they estimate to be 50 miles an hour or something down Grand, and they're swerving, they have the authority to stop that car without having that technical certification to issue the radar or LIDAR enforcement citation.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yes.
Okay.
I think. And then going back to the issue of the collectors, I had that on my list as well. Would it be safe to say that, especially this is a perfect example in Berry Gardens because it is so well laid out and so easy to see that well-defined neighborhood, is it safe to say that a collector's street could and should have a higher speed limit than the other residential streets in the area because of this issue of prevailing speed? Or is it just sort of whatever the speed survey says?
It will be whatever the speed survey says. But right now the posted speed is 25, which is what you'll see in residential neighborhoods. But ultimately you base the street will have a specific design speed. It's designed for something. So yes, and you're right in that regard. However, the speed limit signs are set based on the speed surveys.
So everything in there right now is set at 25, including Cortland?
Yes, in this neighborhood. That's
and
correct.
Then potentially, I've always told people speed surveys, be careful what you wish for, right? Because I've been through this before, because I remember this on Tally Ho, mm-hmm. that we had this problem.
Yes.
Where people wanted a reduced speed limit. We did a speed survey, and they ended up with a higher speed limit.
Yes.
So just, I'm interested to see what that's going to show there. And just, I think Robin was very correct in saying, we're waiting with bated breath to see what that looks like.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. She got that one. She got that one. She got that one. All right. That was it. Thank you.
Just a couple follow-ups to that. If I recall, the driver's license renewal handbook says residential speeds are like 25, and that seems to be fairly common. Do we have to do a speed survey to have residential streets posted 25?
No.
So that's pretty much statewide, is it not, in the...
Yes.
Okay. And then, so that would be... Does that also include a collector street such as Cortland in a residential district such as Berry Gardens, or would the collector streets be subject to the speed survey?
We'll base the posted speed limit on the survey. We'll conduct the speed survey because it's a collector street. We'll base the actual posted speed on the survey results and certified results.
Okay, thank you for that. Those are... Are there any other questions?
Oh, I'm going to ask my question, but I'm going to wait till later.
Okay. We'll move then to public comment. Is there public comment on this issue? Please.
I'm not afraid to start. Good evening, Mayor, and the rest of the City Council members. First of all, I'd like to thank the Chief. The past 6 weeks have been wonderful. When I come home, it's been like Christmas. The lights have been going off continuously, pulling over individuals in our neighborhood. Thank you for that, Chief. And just 2 nights ago, three kids were playing at the park and almost got hit by a speeding car. Just after a ticket was given, the police officer circled around before he parked right in front of my home again. He didn't even have time to park. Another person blew through a stop sign. I've witnessed at least 20 tickets in the past 2 weeks being given out in front of my home and one arrest. That wasn't even mentioned. And I believe there's lots of errors in that traffic report, by the way. It only mentioned two accidents. They missed mine. A car went through my home where I live, went through the fireplace, pushed in the entertainment center, ended up in my living room. That was in 2015. Caused about $35,000, $40,000 of damage. We need to make our neighborhood safe. This isn't a collector street. If you go back to the Berry Gardens specific plan, there was a median that was proposed on Cortland directly as you come in from Grand Avenue that was never constructed. That alone would have stopped the cut-through traffic. I am opposed to having a petition of how many people need to sign in Berry Gardens, when in the knuckle points, the traffic doesn't go through there. The people that are directly affected are the ones off Cortland, which account for only 20 homes. I think the perpetrators, the ones running the stop signs, need to pay for these measures. How about a sign that says triple fines for people that are speeding through our neighborhood? That you'll collect enough money right away to help pay for these measures. But most importantly, we need transparency with this issue. There's been lots of talk through campaigning of having neighborhood meetings. We want a neighborhood meeting, and I suggest we have it at Berry Gardens Park, and have the traffic engineer there as well. And he can witness all the blow-throughs that are going through the stop signs continuously. We have people not obeying the traffic rules. And to say that this is a collector street and say now that people are going to be able to speed faster, we have two stop signs that no one is stopping at. No one. And it's basically cut through traffic. A lot of people that I've been witnessing don't want to go down to Oak Park Boulevard and make the left-hand turn or right-hand turn. I think you would see a lot more if we were watching that intersection even more. I would see the statistics go up a lot more in terms of how many tickets are given out. But we can't give all our resources to our neighborhood alone because our police officers are already overtaxed. They can't be there 24/7. We need your help. We need us, the community, to be able to come before City Council in a workshop and tell you what kind of solution we would like to see to protect our children. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments?
Good old Berry Gardens. Pat Lynch, I'm a resident of Berry Gardens. I'm about having a fit when she said that our speed limit might go up. I live in the corner of Cortland and Strawberry. Strawberry is the first street that when they come off of Grand Avenue, they pick up speed like it's a freeway, and by the time they get to my house, it could be 50 or 60. And it's not just pickup, it is fast. And speed is really bad there. And it's at prom time, morning, noon, and night. And night it goes through till about 10 o'clock. And try to go to sleep with all that traffic. There's children all over. Doesn't seem to bother the cars at all. It's very fast. And when we moved here about a little over 2 years ago, we're in our late 80s. And we came here to live in this beautiful place and have a home in a beautiful residential area, and we're on the corner, and it said 25 miles an hour, a resident street. We weren't expecting a highway, and that's what we've got. And I'm not happy. I love this place, and I love being here, but I don't like knowing the fact that I'm going to have to die to listen to all that traffic. And I just can't see why it would be in the study. It's a residential street. And whatever he said about the park, it is very scary. I've walking my dog, and they're going right through those two stop signs. And they come build up speed from Ash and Grand. And I get the most of it from Grand, of course. By the time they get to me, they've slowed down from the stop sign, and then it's picking up again. But it's terrible. That street is bad, and this traffic is bad. Oak Park have four lanes. Why aren't they there? Why are they allowed to do what they're doing on Cortland?
Thank you. Thank you. Just a small protocol matter. If I could have everyone please address the council directly.
Hi, I'm Michael Morrow, and I live in Berry Gardens. Can I point at the map? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, there's a...
I'm kind of loud. You might be able to hear me anyway.
See if our pointer works.
Oh, okay, there. That works.
Yeah, that's the button right there.
The reason we have you at the mic is so the people at home can hear you. We can hear you just fine, but we want to make sure that everybody watching hears
Good
you.
Good point. You must have experience with this. Okay, so I'm hoping that as you folks explore with us ways of making our neighborhood safer, that you'll keep in mind that, of course, we understand that there are three light-controlled intersections of streets going north and south in our vicinity. There's Oak Park, which has a lot of traffic. There's South and North Cortland, and then there's Elm Street. And so we do get a lot of traffic coming between, you know, for traffic that's coming up, not on Elm and not on Oak Park. But what I would like you folks to just keep in mind with us is that there is a park here. Excuse me, I have shaky hands, or we'll blame it on your pointer. So this is a block-long park, and the neighborhood is pretty much bisected by Cortland Street. We happen to be on this side. What I see on a daily basis is children walking their dogs over to the park. They might play on equipment, walk the dog, you know, throw the ball for the dog. Families, strollers, crossing the street. I'm right over here, my wife and I, and we're 70, give or take. We won't talk about which way. And so one of the things that makes our neighborhood a little more different than some of the others would be the park. Another thing is not every neighborhood has mailbox, you know, the central mailboxes, where in our neighborhood, quite a few of the folks have to cross the street to get to the mailbox. That's the case for us. So every day we're crossing the street and going to the mailbox. It's challenging because there's a stop sign at each side of the park. There's, I guess, one up here and one here. And what I notice is when I'm getting ready to cross the street to go to the mailbox, if I see a car coming around the park approaching the stop sign, I assume, and I'm usually right, that the car is not going to stop at the stop sign and probably not even going to slow down. So if I can see a car coming approaching the stop sign, is that okay?
Yes.
Okay, I just, I don't, you know, I just don't cross. And then the other thing I wanted to just let you know about is there's a curve here that looks pretty gentle in this room, but what happens is with no stop sign at Ash and Cortland, traffic just comes around the corner without stopping and picks up speed as they come around the turn. And I can't see cars because there's usually parked cars lined up. We also get a lot of parking from Soto Sports Complex, so we'll have cars lined up on both sides. And by the time I get far enough into the street to see if there's a car coming, I'm about 2 feet from the center line. And of course, I'm kind of at the point of no return. I really can't get out of the way of a car because by the time they've accelerated to the point where I can see them, they're like a car length away. So maybe a couple car lengths, but they're often going quite fast. So I've had to kind of jump backwards with my dog to avoid cars coming up. Keeping in mind that there's nothing to stop cars coming in here and that we have a park and that we have lots of kids crossing to the park and lots of people crossing to access mailboxes, I hope that if you ever are looking at the results of a traffic study and trying to decide whether the speed limit ought to go up, that those would be special characteristics of our neighborhood that would be important, especially the fact that there's a park that is used by children and families.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for...
we're going to need that again, because we're going to need it.
Okay.
Thank you.
I'll give it to the boss.
Okay.
You go.
I'm Kathy Andrews, and my husband and I live right by the park on Huckleberry Street. And in the 3 years that we have lived there, we have definitely seen an increase in the traffic. I want to also say thank you to the police officers for patrolling the neighborhood. And many times the police cars park right by our house. And I'll go out there and many times thank them for coming, because the whole neighborhood really appreciates your stopping there. Maybe some of the people don't appreciate getting the tickets, but I guess they're all deserving. And we'd like to just encourage you to keep those cars coming, whether you stop or whether you just drive through. We do appreciate it. We're seeing an increase. It's probably from the Trillium group. Did I say that correctly? Because many of those homes are now being occupied, and when the people go out, they have to go either to the left, going out down Granway, or turning right and coming down Cortland. So definitely it's a problem with more traffic there, and I appreciate your concern. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I'll be very brief. My name is Ed Cox. I live at 867 Todd Lane, down near the hospital, adjacent to Halcyon Road, and also adjacent to Fair Oaks. And my question, basically, I just want to know who the go-to person is to determine when the last traffic study was made of those two feeder lines, because the density at certain times of the day is tremendous. It's dangerous to exit our street on either one of those two because of the density, particularly on the Fair Oaks. When the commute traffic, school traffic, you've got about 2 hours, 2 hours and a half, where it's very dangerous to get onto that street. With our new medical complex that's going to be operational soon from a Roy Grandy Hospital, trying to have access to that street during those periods of time is going to be extremely dangerous. I would wager you couldn't make a left turn if you wanted to between those times. My question is, I want to do some further research, but I am ignorant, and I'd like to cure that problem by knowing who the go-to person is to discuss those issues for the last studies that have been made, because the density, it's no longer a rural neighborhood in that area on it, and it's soon to become more dense with further construction in those areas. So if you can help me out, somebody, I'd just like to know where I go for more information.
Thank you very much for your comment. I'll ask the staff if the area there by Halcyon and Fair Oaks was included in the studies that were recently completed.
Yes, so we'll have new speed survey data included for Halcyon and Fair Oaks as well.
At what date, please? It's on the agenda to do that.
It's targeted for the first meeting in November for City Council, November 13th. I suggest all of you follow our agenda updates. You can go onto our website and sign up for an update, and then you can see all of the agendas. And you can also talk to myself, Teresa, or Robin, and we can put you on a list for a certain neighborhood for concerns or things coming before
there's
council.
There's a number of folks in my neighborhood that are really concerned about it, and I'm not elected as a spokesperson. Believe me, I'm just here voluntarily. But we talk, they talk, and we just need the information on it to be informed, to give our input and perhaps suggestions for remediation of those problems that affect us, and they're affecting a lot of other people as well. Mm-hmm. So I'll keep that in mind. You.
Thank you.
I've got it. Thank you very much for your time.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to need that pointer. I also want to show a little video of a car going through the stop signs, but let me say some things first because I don't want to do this.
Did I push?
Yeah, the red button.
No. Oh, there we go. Okay.
Linda Drummy again. Okay, so I live in Berry Gardens. We're talking about Cortland and Graham, but we also need to look at the fact that Blackberry is a thoroughfare from, this is Oak Park, and cars are coming in here to go this way and this way. They're cutting through Blackberry. They're putting in there's new houses going in here. But they're coming in here and they're speeding down and they're going down towards Grant. They're trying to avoid the light there and the light there. and it's gotten, since I moved there 4 years ago, the traffic has increased 10 to 20 fold. It's ridiculous. And those people are cutting through. They do not live in Berry Gardens. So this is all day, mostly the morning, and mostly, so it's right here. This is a dead end. They can't go through here, but this is the main thoroughfare if they're not going this way. So it's bad. And they're coming around this corner, and it's kind of blind, and it gets, cars are parked here and in here. So it's a very dangerous intersection. And Blackberry should be considered maybe separately from Cortland for some calming items, because it is a very dangerous street when they're going, and they are going 50 miles an hour. I've seen them. I wish I could clock them. Give me something I can measure it, and I'd be happy to. Yesterday I was walking my dog, and I was here by the park, and yes, another car blew through the two stop signs by the park. I have a video of one, too. I wanted to ask you another thing. Many of the homes in Berry Gardens are not occupied full-time. Many of them are they live in Bakersfield or they live somewhere else, and they use it as a part-time home. I know of a number of them. They should not be considered as those that need to have signatures for a traffic study or calming efforts. We need speed bumps. We need to have a safe neighborhood, and it is not safe. Somebody mentioned safe. It is not safe. As this gentleman mentioned, it's dangerous crossing Cortland. And at another spot, you can't see the, trying to cross Blackberry. It's a blind kind of a curve here. Cars are coming up here. They don't really see you here until they're on top of you. So if they're coming up this way and you're trying to cross Blackberry, it's almost impossible at times. You can get hit. I've almost gotten hit once. And then I was up here last couple meetings ago, and I mentioned Huckleberry. Cars are blasting through Huckleberry from, I don't know if they're coming through all this way, and they're coming through Huckleberry, but they're going through here and not stopping. This is a very busy little intersection here, even though it's an inner city, inner neighborhood. You've got Blackberry here, you've got Huckleberry, you've got Loganberry, and you've got Raspberry, and they're all trying to go out here. Well, I was coming here, and this car was coming out of Huckleberry, and he almost hit me. I had to stop, I had to honk my horn, and he was pissed. And he swore at me, and it was like he was ready to hit. He could have killed me. I'm continuing on because I have to show you something. So this is a very dangerous, there's no stop sign here at Huckleberry. All right, and there needs to be, because there's traffic coming here, and there's traffic coming here, and this guy, I've seen a couple times, and I'm not the only one that's almost been hit. The other neighbors over there on the other side have also mentioned the number of cars have been hit almost a number of times. Are you waiting for somebody to get killed? I hope not, or very badly damaged. I could have been really hurt seriously the other day. And so we need more traffic control, and we need some stop signs in here. And it is difficult. I have a video of a car blast going through, not going fast, but I have a video of a car going through both of the stop signs. I don't know if you want to see it, but we could present it up there if you're interested. It's a short video, and I didn't want the person. I stood out there one day on my little phone taping people going through, and I sent, Mayor Hill has seen it, but people are going through the stop signs and not slowing down, not anything. They're just going. And on my street, cars are going extremely fast. They're going 40 to 50 miles an hour around that corner, and it's very dangerous to walk in the neighborhood. I don't know
Thank
if you,
you.
Want to...
The video would probably be difficult to see, but I have personally seen cars that just at road speed passed right through the stop signs.
Yeah, no consideration for slowing down at all. So that's a regular, that's a daily thing. And this happened yesterday. It happens every day I walk my dog. So it's not
just a remote thing.
We hear you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
Patricia Price. And I really, that's not my neighborhood. But I've been sitting here listening to these people getting up and telling you that they are in danger, and part of what you do as a council is you watch out for the health and safety of your citizens. So when there is obviously a clear and present danger, something needs to be done about it. I know that there are temporary things that will slow people down when they come through Cortland. They could be put up very quickly, at not a whole lot of cost. It'd be very temporary. It may be hay bales. I don't know. Something to slow people down. If they're not going to stop, at least slow them down so people have time to get out of their way. We really need to address this. And I know, I mean, there are concerns all over the city. My neighborhood, it's a cut-through area. And some people speed. I watch out for them. I'm pretty nimble. But this is a situation, it sounds like there are children playing and elderly people walking their dogs. They need you to protect them.
Thank you very much. Any other comment?
I have a couple of follow-up questions.
Okay. Hearing no more comment, we'll close.
I think we got somebody coming.
Okay.
Fernanda Garcia, Aurora Grande, Berry Gardens. I pulled my surveillance because I live on Blackberry, and I don't see any speeding. I see the occasional fast car driving, but it seems like for us to judge and see that people, that we're saying people are speeding, I think since the police have been there, there's been a decrease in speeding. Maybe, can we keep the comments down, Mayor? Can we keep the comments in the background down some?
Yes, we'll ask everyone
I saw last meeting, it was really impolite, the attacks on the city council. So first of all, I want to thank all of you. I want to thank staff and officer for what you guys do and what you guys put up with up here. So that's just off the record. But I've worked on some of the projects, the CVS, the Figueroa Mountain, the basin there. Some of those were my projects. And the specific plan took into account that the way the road was curved and the stop signs put there, those were measures put in as a traffic on a collector road as a traffic deterrent for that. So those were considerations at the beginning of the projects. And the traffic that was going to be put through this collector road was taken into account back when those projects were originally built. I was also the engineer on the first Nick Tompkins project, but that didn't go through, so I wasn't on the Trillium, and I believe that was an increase of residents in there. So maybe that was not taken into account, but the first traffic study was done with that in mind, that collector road does curve through there and the two stop signs were put in there. But it is a collector road. It's meant to take some of the, it's meant to alleviate some of the traffic off of Oak Park and Elm Street, and it does. And there's other areas such as Fair Oaks, Halcyon. My parents live out on Elm Street, off of Elm Street, and those are way, way more dangerous than where we live. And I just find it unearthly to be able to say that, you know, we have issues. We do have issues of people rolling through stop signs, but with the officers that are around, it makes it much better. And I think it reminds us all that we have to stop. I mean, I used to roll through there, you know, and now I don't. So it's these are the things that we need. And I raised two kids in Berry Gardens, and they're fine. We just keep them off the roads, keep them on the sidewalks. We have sidewalks that are 3 inches raised right now due to trees and stuff. These are far more bigger issues than the traffic problems that we think we have in Berry Gardens. And you're welcome to my surveillance system. And I can tell you there's not a speeding problem on Blackberry. And for someone to say that someone is speeding is really difficult. So thank you. And thank you again for your service.
Thank you very much. Any other comment? No, I'm sorry. You've already spoken, but thank you.
My suggestion was just that there's a lot of trees along the street, and they kind of block the view
thank
of
you.
Oncoming traffic. To see the signs, anything we could do to help that situation would be great.
Okay. Thank you very much. Back to the council for comment, if.
I have some questions. I have some follow-up questions before a comment. Chief Pryor, with the resources available that you currently have, given what you've already stated to us, related to the specified training that's needed. Do your resources allow patrol visibility during the peak hours in these areas that were discussed at this time? I mean, depending other calls, traffic accidents, and things like that. I guess where I'm going with this is with the resources that you currently have, and I need to remind everybody that the resources that the city has and the expectations for services are going to be reduced somewhat because of the budget cuts that had to be taken to satisfy CalPERS demands on the city for increased payment. So with that caveat, I wanted to know if just police presence is something that the officers could manage based on the resources. I know from my experience that just having police presence is a huge deterrent, and was wondering if that's something that's feasible until the speed surveys can get done and all of that, and just wanted your take on that.
Sure, and that's something that happens regularly. So I get complaints.
Targeted enforcement.
Right, so we call it directed traffic enforcement or target enforcement if it's not traffic related. But I'll use Wozner Road, for example. We heard the complaint earlier about Wozner Road. So I will direct my staff in between their calls for service to spend extra time out there, more than they already do. And I do want to assure everybody that the officers, you know, this is about 5.5 square mile city, and they are out there patrolling all parts of this little city.
Sure.
They're not ignoring certain areas of the city.
Right.
And so when I get these complaints, I assign them to go out and do some directed, targeted enforcement of whatever that complaint is. Mm-hmm. And yes, they will do that in between calls for service. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm hopeful that we'll be full staff soon to where we can just dedicate somebody back onto the motorcycle traffic officer position. That person will be able to go out and all day, every day, go do traffic, not have to rely on whatever my staffing levels are that particular shift, and then go out and try to do it in between calls for service. It's very inconsistent.
Sure. Sure, and I appreciate the reminder that the good news, bad news scenario is that the staffing, there was at least 4 vacancies at one time. The good news now is now those positions are being filled. The bad news is that they all have to go through their TO training, and all of that is the priority. And so although we might have more bodies, there's certain limitations to their scope of experience related to how they can be utilized because they're still in their training phases. I appreciate your responses to that. Also, I appreciate the sergeant that was watch out, Grace Lane, and Old Park? Rodeo. In Grace Lane, there was a police officer counting and watching while I was there. Someone rolled through the stop, and I said, well, I better let you get to it, and there he went. And so I appreciate the staging on Grace Lane as well. So I'm back to questions now. Director McClish, do you have any idea with the work that's been recently done on Halcyon and some of the analysis that's been done, do we have any indication of the increase in traffic on Halcyon due to development areas out on Napoma Mesa? I've talked to several people that are actually using Halcyon and Elm Street, maybe not as much Elm Street, but certainly Halcyon. And what they're doing is to avoid Highway 101, they're cutting through Halcyon and they're going up Highway 1 to connect to Willow. And then they're jumping on the freeway from Willow. And so do we have any information to address the gentleman that resides at Todd Lane that it may not be, certainly our development has added traffic, but if there's any regional anecdotal, I think it's important for our residents to help balance that it's not solely what Aurora Grandy City is doing. We're a collector city.
Halcyon Road is a regional route. And just for that reason, it does connect to the mainline freeway. It also connects to Highway 1. And we do have access to regional traffic models performed for the county or SLOCOG, the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, in for regional traffic assessment reasons, and we can get numbers for that. Some of those traffic volumes were used certainly in our Halcyon Road Complete Streets plan. Todd Lane was considered as an issue. It was well brought up by residents and folks participating in the charrettes for the Halcyon Road Complete Streets plan. That we hope to bring before this council also soon. We're nearing the finish line on the environmental review for that document, and of course we have a major active transportation grant out there waiting to be approved. I hope. I don't know. And so I would just, since you've asked specific to Todd Lane, yes, that issue has been brought up. It is addressed in both the alternatives for the Halcyon Road Complete Streets plan, so we'll be happy to talk to you about that. But also to your concern or your observation about the regional nature of Halcyon Road, and yes, it is used by, well used by travelers in the county.
Okay, very good. And so perhaps the gentleman from Todd Lane will get information on when the Halcyon Complete Street, because it seems like that really targets your concern on Todd Lane, so we'll keep you informed on that.
Amen.
And then the other two follow-up I have, I know that in our sister city in Pismo Beach, there is a flashing stop sign that is near, I don't know, the cliffs and where they're doing a new development. And so I don't know that we have any flashing stop signs. But I'm wondering if that would be, I don't want to say a cheap fix, because it's the analysis part that, you know, $12,000 for the initial analysis and such. But I'm wondering if that's been talked about as perhaps a short-term solution to just start putting, I don't know what the parameters are for flashing stop signs. Of course, flashing stop signs would likely be LED. It might seem like a discotheque for some neighbors after the sun goes down, so maybe that's a detriment, and maybe that isn't such a great idea, but maybe that would get people's attention.
Certainly, high visibility signs are part of the menu for traffic calming. We have actually rapid flashing beacon signs on Fair Oaks.
The crosswalk.
On the crosswalk. That's a different type of, but the same kind of thing you're talking about. I'm not sure about the cost or what. Sure. Certainly the pros and cons you've identified. You'll have lights and then you'll have lights. But it's, we can certainly look at that. There's kind of a emerging degree of variation I've noticing in these high visibility signs, probably just due to the nature of the LED lighting. But well, we can, since the stop sign is already existing.
That's what I'm thinking.
Then we can take a look at that. A warrant for a new stop sign is a whole different matter.
Right, yeah. Right. And that's what I was thinking. If it could be modified in some degree. And you know, Christmas is coming. They have all those great LED lights. You know, we can just go in and just kind of. I'm kidding. Those are all my questions. I may have more comments, but those are my questions. If anybody else has any questions.
No and questions. Others. I have comments later on.
We're pretty much ready for comments on this.
I have questions.
Mayor Pro Tem has a question.
I had exactly that thing written down in my list here after listening to the community, and my question is, if we're talking about a lighted stop sign in an already controlled intersection, does that require, what does that require in terms of making that happen? Is that the same, I guess what I'm saying is, what we're bringing forward to the community today is as much education as it is a discussion as to how we go ahead and put these things into place. And we've talked about having agreement in the neighborhood and all of that, but my question is kind of piggybacking and saying, okay, well, if we've already got the traffic calming measure, which is the stop sign, then what's the procedure for changing that just simply to a lighted sign? Maybe there's a sidebar that's about to happen.
Yeah,
I don't know. Okay.
Everybody's leaving me. I would be happy to actually talk to the chief and public works director and city engineer about this, just to ferret out what would be involved. I do know there's some things to look at for high generally speaking, for high visibility signs. We can certainly again take a look at that.
I ask that because it's not even on the list here. We've got high visibility crosswalks, but that's more talking about like what we have over here. So it's kind of not even listed here as one of those options. So. Yeah, if you could, I don't know if that requires an act of the council to ask you to bring that forward, or what does that look like?
I'd probably, well, I'm hearing some consensus up there, so I'm happy to look at it, but in your comments, probably if you let us know as a group if that's what you would like us to spend a little time on.
And then there was a suggestion by someone in the community about, can't we just do triple fines, and that'll stop people from doing things. What is the... How do we set those, Chief, and are we allowed to do that? I mean, what is that? Is that an actual possibility?
I don't believe so, but the fine, the bail amounts are all set by the court. So you're talking about California Vehicle Code violations, and so we just go by what is established by the courts, but...
So when we see things like in a construction area where, like when you're on Highway 101 and it says, okay, triple fines if you speed through here, those are things that are set in the vehicle code when you have construction underway or something like that? Is that how that
works?
That's
my understanding. I don't know if our city attorney can weigh in on
that. Well, just one other thing I'd like to say to clear up a myth is we get very, very little of that money. Most of the money goes to the court system.
Right. What money?
Ticket money. So it's a very, very small percent of what we get. So basically, if we were able to triple the fine, the courts would just take that money, okay. And it wouldn't be a windfall for us.
Okay. There was some discussion as to whether or not Cortland was ever a collector street, and in terms of the speed survey and what we can make that speed limit, whether we call it a collector or not kind of is irrelevant, except for that it fell into the one of the ones that we looked at. Is that correct?
Yes, essentially that's correct. We include it in our speed surveys because it's a designated collector street. The posted speed limit will be determined based upon the speed survey data.
So in theory, then, looking at Cedar is the one that goes through to the rest of the old neighborhood over there. And so in theory, if you did a speed study on Cedar and found that the prevailing speed was 35, not 25, then that posted speed limit would also have to change. I mean, we're not studying Cedar, but I'm just trying to figure out how this all works.
Yes, if Cedar was included
in
the study for some reason, and we had that speed survey data, I would generally speaking, yes, there's all kinds of criteria to review and exceptions based on land uses nearby, based on road curvature and site distance, and there's a list of things to go down, number of residents that you have to review, but potentially, theoretically, yes.
But in terms of whether we call it arterial or collector or residential, that's kind of for our internal use in deciding what we're going to study. It doesn't really have any bearing on what the...
Well, there we have our street classification included in our circulation element in our general plan. So those are pre-designated new streets, and you know, maybe modified or included. But yeah, we base the necessity of needing to conduct the speed surveys on that classification.
Okay. That's it. Thank you very much for questions.
Okay. Comments then, Councilmember Brown.
He's been waiting and patiently. Waiting.
I'm going to keep it shorter.
What are you saying?
First of all, Chief, I want to thank you so much for being so proactive. It was clear that you listened to what happened at one of the meetings and you acted upon it. And there was clearly some good done by it. And what I'm fascinated by most of all is it taught us that it wasn't truly, you know, a large majority of pass-through traffic. It was local traffic, which tells me it's a neighborhood issue, and the neighborhood needs to work on dealing with it in some ways. You can't do it all. You just can't do it all. So I think the neighborhood should get together. That somebody mentioned going to the park and talking about it. You should get your neighbors involved. That your neighbors that are speeding through the stop sign, get their attention. You're part of the solution as well. You can't just put it on everybody else. So that's my first comment. And secondly, the gentleman who mentioned the layout, I remember very specifically what he said about the way it was laid out, and he's correct. They did that as a way of you know, trying to calm the traffic through that area. It was, and maybe it's not exactly working yet, because people are blowing through the stop sign, but that's an issue of personal choice. That's not some city can't fix personal choice. You know, people have to do that. So I appreciate that we are going to get a traffic officer, and I know that he's going to do his best to get him out there and fix the problem. And John, I'm sorry you had a drive-through made out of your home. That's never a good thing. If I had kids, I'd be freaking out there. And I did have kids, and so I appreciate your passion, but in the end, there is a certain amount of personal responsibility that comes into play here, and you really need to shame your neighbors that are blowing through stop signs and telling them it's not okay, that they're part of the neighborhood and they need to be part of the solution as well. So I know people don't want to hear that. They want the city to fix everything, but sometimes we don't have the manpower. It's not that we don't want to. The chief got right on it, and he wrote 40 citations or whatever it was, and he was successful. And so it's not that we're not trying, but notice 40 citations later, the problem still exists. We can't fix it all, folks. We just can't. So give the police chief a break. Thank him and his officers for the work they do. They're going to keep trying. But you also need to figure out how you can get your neighbors that are actually the ones breaking the law to do the right thing. And I don't know if that's an easy solution, but it's the only one I can think of. Thank you. Thank you for the time, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Harney.
Well stated, Councilmember Brown. The only thing that I would add is I appreciate the discussions that we're able to have from the community and the community members. Also, I appreciate the willingness to hear and the action that is taken as a result of these discussions, whether they are short-term, whether it takes 6 months to get through. But it impresses me that everybody is hearing one another, and sometimes that's really hard to do when there are some, you know, very valid concerns being raised and there's not immediate solutions to those, or maybe easy solutions to those, or solutions that will please everyone. So I appreciate that. And the last thing I would like to add is to build the consensus would be to actually look in to see if there is success using those high visibility stop signs. I know there's certain studies that say too many signs don't help. So you can actually oversaturate an area with too many directional signs, and it creates chaos. But that I'd really like, I think, us to look into something like that, because what I heard tonight is people, even with the enforcement, are still either rolling
or blowing through the stop signs, and we all know what happens when somebody blows through a stop sign. The outcome is, I'll just leave it at that. Everybody knows what happens when someone blows through a stop sign. And so I think that would be my takeaway tonight, trying to balance the resources that we have with the other priorities. I don't think that would be too much to ask to just get us some information on that and see if that could be implemented. Thank you.
Councilmember Barnes.
Thank you. I agree a lot with what my colleagues have said. We have a limited amount of police officers that can be watching every stop sign in town. I hear complaints from people, just right here, actually, by Councilmember Harmon's house. I was almost hit by someone running a stop sign. So, unfortunately, there are people that are careless. The police officers can't be everywhere. It's just a good idea that we really be aware and that we take great care when we're crossing streets. I also very much appreciate the police department getting right on it and getting over there. And I think that perhaps if half of those people that were cited live in that neighborhood, they'll perhaps think twice about running that stop sign. If someone else was in the car with them, they'll maybe think twice about running it as well. So I think that helps. There are stop signs there, so there's really not much more we can do. I appreciate that we have refreshed our memory on the traffic calming guidelines. There is a process. I hope that we will stick by the process. There's lots of ideas in there. I like the idea. If there is a neighborhood groundswelling of people that want some of these things possibly done, the petition is a good idea to show that there is a consensus for the most part. So I would really encourage the neighborhood to use that and to go through those. And like Councilmember Brown said, let's have a partnership. We're sort of airing these things on the Channel 20. The police are out there doing their job. Let's have the neighborhood get together with their neighbors and see what ideas they have with if there's enough people to sign that petition. And then the lighted stop signs, I like the idea, but I think if I lived right next to that at nighttime and it's flashing in my window, so I would be okay with taking a look at it, but just keeping in mind what it looks like if you're right there on the stop sign. And I am looking forward, sort of, to the speed surveys coming back. I don't know if I am. I remember that last time. Thank you.
That was a whole lot of not fun.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Okay, the only thing I have to add, first of all, thank you very much for kicking that off, Councilmember Brown, because I think you nailed it. I think the key here, the biggest key is, I don't want it to be lost on the community that the council did not direct the police department to go do that. That Chief Pryor heard the concerns here in the chambers, and he took it upon himself to go out there and do the right thing. And not only did he do the right thing, but he also revealed a really important piece, and we've all talked about this, which is 50% of the problem are the people that live there, and that requires the people who live there to respect the area that the people are living in. And I don't know if shaming is the word I would use, but the first thing that's listed as the passive solutions to this problem, the very first thing on the list is education, and perhaps a neighborhood flyer, something going out, something with some even this as an educational tool can be helpful. And there was a suggestion that we need a workshop to tell everyone what they'd like to see and come to council. And that's essentially what we're doing right now. And so now it's up to the neighborhood to gather that groundswell or that 66%. And the reason that threshold is there, I think it's really important to recognize that these, especially when we're talking about the active traffic calming measures, the ones that are speed humps or additional signage, or the ones that are really the word is affective, not effective. They're affective. They change the nature of the whole environment, and they have very real consequences that sometimes they seem like no-brainers. Oh, a speed hump is gonna slow down traffic, and it's just a no-brainer. We got to put that there, except you just realized you lost four parking spaces on the street, and that now we've got an unintended consequence. And every single one of these comes with a consequence, and we want to make sure that we hear from the majority of the neighborhood so that we know that the people who are going to be affected by that every single day have weighed in on it. And sometimes when we're here in the council chambers, you know, people who are invigorated and upset come here, and that's great, and they bring the things to our attention, but we need to sometimes make sure that we're hearing the majority and when we're making these decisions that are very affective. So on in terms of whether or not, I guess I would like to see just procedurally how we might discuss what would entail changing a stop sign from a regular stop sign to a lighted one, and then we can ask the neighborhood if that's what they want. And the neighborhood, I think, needs to make that decision because it does have those potential unintended consequences that again might seem like a very easy decision here, but I don't live in that neighborhood, so I want to make sure that I hear from the majority of residents that are there. So thank you very much, and Chief Pryor, again, thank you so much for taking the bull by the horns and doing that.
I also want to thank the police department for their proactive work there and throughout the city, not just in the Berry Gardens neighborhood, but we have numbers of issues as people who live by Harlow Elementary, for example, and we heard of Wasner Road and other areas in the city that have similar problems. And Councilmember Brown really hit on it is, I think all of us would ask all of us to be good neighbors and to respect the stop signs and street speed limits and such are put in there for your protection. And just in the last week, we've had fatal accidents out on very close by on Highway 101. That is a very real danger. And I've personally witnessed a number of vehicles in the Berry Gardens neighborhood going through those stop signs. I think the flashing stop signs is a good idea. LEDs can be set to be less bright at night and more bright in the daytime so that they're appropriately safe and still less obtrusive at night, yes. So that's, I think, an excellent suggestion. Again, what we wanted to do was highlight this for residents, not only of Berry Gardens, but of the other neighborhoods, to understand what the available tools are, how to go about requesting changes, the two-thirds petition and other suggestions. And again, I will personally request, and I'm sure the council will join us, to please be good neighbors. Those laws and regulations are put in place for your protection and the protection of all of us in the community. And it's up to all of us to observe the stop signs and observe the speed limits and to be good neighbors. So with that, this is a receive and file item, and I thank the staff for bringing this forward and in the discussion again. So.
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, if I may, the direction that we're receiving, and we appreciate everyone's input and comments, is to look into a better visible stop sign. It may be that we could coincide when it turns on to be with the AM and PM peak with traffic or during the daytime. We would love to be able to look at that and deal with that administratively. If it's something that we could find, that we can do that without having to go through warrants, and it's a small amount of money that we do that. I have a couple of suggestions just for a couple of other low-hanging fruit that came to my mind. Better markings on the street, so we can go and we could look to make sure that there's enough speed limit signs on Cortland. I want to hold off just a little bit before we paint more speed limit signs on the road until we see what the speed survey is. But these are pretty simple things that I think we could do at the staff level to look at that. One thing that came, the talk about having to cross the street to go to the gang mailbox, is let's talk to the post office and see if we can't get that split up so that there's a gang mailbox on each side of the street. That way it may avoid some conflict. So I think that's the direction that we have. And unless we hear anything differently, we do appreciate people's input and you know, the direction, the thank you to the chief is well-deserved. No direction from me either. The next day, I tried to drive through the neighborhood. I did not get a ticket. I stopped at the stop signs. But I saw them out there immediately, and I called Bo, and I thanked him for that bit of, you know, he cares about this community as well as everyone here. And we appreciate everyone's input, and we'll see if this makes it better for everyone.
Very good.
Thank you all very much. Item 13 then is council communications.
I have a communication.
I do too.
Councilmember Hahn?
I'd like to remind everybody that this Saturday, October 13th, the Five Cities Fire Authority there is kicking off their, this week is Fire Prevention Week, and so there will be an open house at 140 Traffic Way, which is Station 1. And in that open house, there will be auto extrication demonstrations. There will also be fire extinguisher training. And if you haven't had the opportunity to see it, it would be a great opportunity to come and view the newly dedicated 9/11 memorial, which is available there. Also, Friends of Five Cities Fire Authority will be there to present and share information about this nonprofit organization that's dedicated to raising funds for and supporting your fire authority. But wait, there's more.
So, what's the timing on that again? Can you remind me?
The timing is, and thank you, I don't think I say to that, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. is the open house at Station 1, and then got flu shots on the 21st, which is a Sunday, also at Station 1 on Traffic Way, from 9 a.m. to 12, there will be a free flu shot clinic, and that is sponsored by the San Luis Obispo Public Health Department. Flu shots for everyone 3 years of age or older, no income or residency requirements, although there's something about a nasal spray flu vaccine that is not available this year, so I did not want you to be disappointed thinking you would get that. And also, they suggest to come early because they do have limited supplies. And this concludes my public service announcements. Thank you.
Both good ones. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any others?
Yeah, I have two.
Excuse us, folks.
Where's the flu shot clinic, she's asking?
Oh, it's empty.
The flu shot clinic is at Station 1 on 140 Traffic Way at the firehouse on Station 1.
Across from Miners.
Right.
I wanted to let everyone in the community know, and the council and staff as well. I had talked about, we had all discussed the HEAP funds and that the county would have a forum so that they could gauge gauge what South County needs in the way of homeless services. So that will be on November 7th. I don't have a time or a location. I know it'll be in the evening and most likely at the regional center, but still getting that together. But this is really important for us to take an active interest because we need to be competitive in this grant process. If we want to get people that are homeless off the streets and into housing, this is how we do it. These are the people that are doing it, and so we can't I don't know how to say this nicely, but we can't just complain about the homeless and not show up and give our input and give feedback on what we think will work and not work. They really, if no one shows up from AG or South County, you know, I'm not sure the money could go to North County. So November 7th, I hope everyone will come and listen and give their feedback. I will get a time and a location as soon as I have it. And then thank you to everyone who attended the Empty Bowls event. It was, of course, as it is every year, more successful than the last. It was 800 in attendance, which was up from 100 people from last year. And the gross was $44,000. That was up $3,000 from last year. So that event, just everybody takes part in that. You see everyone you know. It's a wonderful way for people to help out, and so I really appreciate everyone being there from our city. Thank you.
Very good. Any others? Okay. Moving on then, any last comments or suggestions? Wingman, please.
Again, I'm Susan Garcia, and I live in Berry Gardens. It seems like we're more popular for not being than we are for being. We have a really great neighborhood. The police have been there patrolling. It's really great. A few things that I just wanted to touch on right quickly is that you had mentioned about the flashing stop sign. Why couldn't we kill two birds with one stone and do the lighted crosswalk in the area where the gentleman is saying he can't get to his mailbox, happens to be right at the same entrance of where those stop signs are that people are running. If people see that flashing crossing, they're going to stop for the stop sign because they see that somebody's trying to cross at the same time. It'll bring a little more apt to the people wanting to stop for that stop sign in those two places, because I know where those post office box are. And the other thing is that it's really important as a city council that you have full control of your city council meetings. And that's not to anyone in general. It's to the whole entire council. That we don't have narration in the background when somebody is speaking. If we can get more control over that situation and give everybody the chance to speak. And when you have a town hall meeting with a select few, the situation where you're saying we should speak up at the park, have a meeting at the park, that's more of a situation where we're going to start attacking our neighbors, which is already happening in Berry Gardens. We're already being attacked by neighbors. We're already being told we're not doing what's right in Berry Gardens, or you're getting singled out as a neighbor because you're not the neighbor that they want to live next to. Well, we've been there for 18 years, and we've loved every single neighbor in our neighborhood except for now a select few who are transplants from the Bay Area. So when I come to a city council meeting, and I don't speak very much, I'm not a very good speaker, but I expect that I'm going to have that same respect that I'm giving you as a city council member, to ask that the people in the audience not speak when somebody's at the podium, or have an outside conversation outside the door when you are all still speaking, which is what just clearly just happened. And I'm sorry, Mayor Hill, that's your responsibility. You have the title as the mayor. Act as the mayor. Stand your ground with the people that you see that are going outside of the boundaries and speaking when other people are speaking. That's what I expect from you as a city as a city council member. That's what I expect for you who wants to be reelected in the city of Arroyo Grande, or for anybody who's running for election. Please have respect for us at the podium by controlling your city council meeting. That's all we're asking. And we don't want Berry Gardens to be known for its bad neighborhood, rather to be a good neighborhood. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any others?
Just as an explanation, Chief Pryor was outside getting those people moved out when that happened. He was already taking care of that problem. So it was not a problem that could have needed to be handled in here. He was handling it out there. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comment? Okay. Hearing none, we have no closed session this evening. Move to adjourn.
No, I want to stay.
Barbara and Tim don't have many...